boiling. He could feel the beast inside him move, yawning with wicked wakefulness. The berserker? Now? There was no blood anywhere. Yet. What would happen when there was?
Touch me, Grim. Here.
Jillian placed his hand on her breast and drew his head to hers. He groaned and shifted, rubbing in slow, erotic circles against her open thighs. Dimly, he realized that the berserker was rousing into full awareness, but it was somehow different. Not violent, but aroused, violently hard, and violently hungry for every taste of Jillian it could have. He would have laid her back upon the table, but there was no longer a table, so instead he lowered them both into a chair. He shifted so her legs dangled over its arms, and she sat facing him, her hands on his shoulders, her womanhood bared above him. She needed no encouragement to press herself against him, teasing him with the brush of her peaked nipples across his chest. Jillian dropped her head back, baring the slender arch of her neck, and Grim froze a long moment, drinking in the vision of his lovely Jillian straddling his lap, her narrow waist curving into those lush hips. Although he'd managed to slide her gown from her shoulders, the fabric pooled at her waist, and she was a goddess rising from a sea of silk.
"Christ, you are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen."
Jillian's head whipped back, and she stared at him. Her look of disbelief quickly became a look of simple pleasure, then an expression of mischievous sensuality.
"When I was 13,
she said, running her fingers down the arrogant curve of his jaw,
"I watched you with a maid, and I vowed to myself that one day I would do everything to you that she did. Every kiss."
She dropped her mouth to his nipple. Her tongue flicked out as she tasted his skin.
"Every touch."
She slipped her hand down his abdomen to his hard shaft.
"And every taste."
Grim groaned and grabbed her hand, preventing her fingers from curling around him. If her lovely hand so much as locked around him one time, he would lose control and be inside her in a heartbeat. Calling upon every ounce of his legendary discipline, he held his body away. He refused to hurt her like that. A confession of his own spilled from his lips.
"From the day you began to mature, you drove me crazy. I couldn't close my eyes at night without wanting you beneath me, without wanting to be beside you, inside you. Jillian St. Clair, I hope you're as tough as you like to believe you are, because you're going to need every ounce of strength you possess for me tonight."
He kissed her, silencing any reply she might have made. She melted into his kiss until he pulled back. He regarded her tenderly.
"And Jillian," he said softly, "I feel it too. I always did."
His words flung open her heart, and the smile she gave him was dazzling.
"I knew it,"
she breathed. As his hand slid over her heated skin, Jillian abandoned herself to the sensation. When he palmed her between her thighs, she cried out softly, and her body bucked against his hand.
"More, Grim. Give me more,"
she whispered. His eyes narrowed as he watched her. Pleasure mingled with amazement and desire on her expressive features. He knew he was large, both in width and length, and she needed to be prepared. When she began to move wildly against his hand, he could deny himself no longer. He positioned her above him.
"You're in control this way, Jillian. It will hurt you, but you're in control. If it hurts too much, tell me," he said fiercely.
"It's all right, Grim. I know it will hurt at first, but Kaylee told me that if the man is a skilled lover, he will make me feel something more incredible than I've ever felt."
"Kaylee told you that?"
Jillian nodded.
"Please,"
she breathed.
"Show me what she meant."
Grim expelled a fascinated breath. His Jillian had no fear. He gently slipped the head of his shaft inside her and eased her down, gauging her every flicker of emotion. Her eyes flared. Her hand flew down to curl around his shaft.
"Big,"
she said worriedly.
"Really, Pig? Are you certain this works?"
A grin of pure delight curved his lip.
"Very big," he agreed, "but just right to pleasure a woman."
He slipped into her carefully. When he met the resistance of the barrier, he paused. Jillian panted softly.
"Now, Grim, do it."
He closed his eyes briefly and cupped his hands on her bottom, positioning her above him. When he opened his eyes, resolve glimmered in their depths. With one firm thrust, he pierced the barrier. Jillian gasped.
"That wasn't so bad,"
she breathed after a moment.
"I thought it would really hurt."
When he began to move slowly, her eyes flared.
"Oh!"
She cried out, and he silenced her with a kiss. Moving slowly, he rocked her against him until any trace of pain in her wide eyes disappeared, and her face was illuminated by anticipation of what she sensed was dancing just out of her reach. She initiated an erotic, circular movement with her hips, nipping her lower lip between her teeth. He watched her, entranced by her innate sensuality. She was abandoned, uninhibited, plunging wholly into their intimate play without reservation. Her lips curved deliciously as a long, slow thrust of his hips hinted at the passion to come, and he smiled with wicked delight. He raised her up and switched places with her, placing her on the chair. Kneeling, he pulled her forward, wrapped her legs around his waist, and slid deep within her, pressing with exquisite friction against the mysterious place deep inside her that would cast her over the edge. He teased the nub between her legs until she squirmed against him, begging with her body for what only he could give her. The berserker exulted within him, frolicking in a way he had never thought possible. When she cried out and shuddered against him, Grim Roderick made a husky, rich sound that was more than laughter. It was the resonant knell of liberation. His triumph quickly became a groan of release. The sensation of her body shuddering around him so tightly was more than he could resist, and he exploded inside her. Jillian clung to him, gasping as an unfamiliar sound penetrated her reeling mind. Her muscles fused to molten uselessness. Her head fell forward, and she peered through her hair at the nude warrior man kneeling before her.
You can laugh! Really, truly laugh! She exclaimed breathlessly.
He traced his thumbs up the inside of her thighs, over the light skein of blood. Blood of her virginity marked her pale thighs.
Jillian,
Don't freeze up on me, Grim Roderick,
Jillian said instantly. He began shaking violently.
I can't help it, he said tightly, knowing they weren't talking about the same thing at all. The Great Hall, he muttered. I am such an ass. I am so damned.
Stop it!
Jillian grabbed his head with both hands, leveling him with a furious look.
I wanted this, she said intensely. I waited for this. I needed this. Don't you dare regret it. I don't, and I never will.
Grim froze, transfixed by the blood that marked her thighs, waiting for the sensation of lost time to begin. It wouldn't be long before the darkness claimed him and the violence ensued. But moments ticked by, and it didn't happen. Despite the raging energy that flooded his body, the madness never came. He gazed at her, dumbfounded. The beast within him was fully awakened, yet tame. How could that be? No bloodlust, no need for violence, all the good things the berserker brought, and none of the danger.
Jillian, he breathed reverently.
Chapter 17.
How are you feeling?
Grim asked quietly. Punching the pillows, he maneuvered Quinn to a sitting position. The window fittings were tied loosely back. Swags framed the casements, and the crescent moon cast enough light that his heightened vision allowed him to function as if it were broad daylight. Quinn blinked groggily at Grim and peered through the gloom.
Please don't,
he groaned when Grim reached for a cloth. Grim stopped in mid-reach.
Do know what? I was merely going to wipe your brow.
Don't smother me with any more of that blasted mandrake, Quinn muttered. Half the reason I feel so lousy is because Kaylee keeps knocking me out.
One bed over, Ramsay rumbled assent.
Don't let her make us sleep any more, man. My head is splitting from that crap, and my tongue feels as if some wee furry beastie crawled in, kicked over on its back, and died there. 3 days ago. And now it's rotting.
Enough! Do you have to be so descriptive?
Quinn made a face of disgust as his empty stomach heaved. Grim raised his hands in a gesture of assent.
No more mandrake, I promise.
So, how are you two feeling?
Like bloody hell,
Ramsay groaned.
Light a candle, would you? I can't see a thing. What happened? Who poisoned us?
A dark expression flitted across Grim's face. He stepped into the hallway to light a taper, then lit several candles by the bedside and returned to his seat.
I suspect it was meant for me, and my guess is the poison was in the chicken.
The chicken?
Quinn exclaimed, wincing as he sat up straight.
Didn't the barkeep bring it? Why would the barkeep try to poison you?
I do not think it was the barkeep. I think it was the butcher's attempt at revenge. My theory is that if either of you had consumed the entire basket, you would have died. It was intended for me. But the two of you split it.
Well, that doesn't make any sense if the butcher meant it for you, Grim,
Quinn protested.
He'd seen you in action. Any man knows you can't poison a
bastard as ornery as myself,
Grim roared, drowning out Quinn's last word before Ramsay heard it. Ramsay clutched his head.
Ach, man, quit bellowing, you're killing me.
Quinn mouthed a silent, sorry, at Grim, followed by an apologetic whisper.
It's the lingering effects of the mandrake. I'm stupid right now.
What?
Ramsay said.
What are you two whispering about?
Even between the two of us, we didn't even eat all the chicken,
Quinn continued, evading Ramsay's query.
And I thought the innkeeper dismissed the butcher after that incident. I asked him to do it myself.
What incident?
Ramsay asked.
Apparently not.
Grim ran a hand through his hair and sighed.
Did you get his name?
Ramsay asked.
Who? The innkeeper?
Quinn gave him a puzzled look.
No, the butcher.
Ramsay rolled his eyes.
Why?
Quinn asked blankly.
Because the bastard poisoned a Logan, you fool. That doesn't happen without recompense.
No vengeance, Grim warned. Just forget it, Logan. I've seen what you can do when you focus on vengeance. The two of you came out of this bungled attempt unharmed. That does not justify murdering a man, no matter how much he might deserve it for other things.
Where's Jillian?
Quinn changed the subject quickly.
I have these foggy memories of a goddess hovering over my bed.
Ramsay snorted.
Ha! Just because you think you were making some progress before we were both poisoned doesn't mean you've won her, de Moncrief.
Grim winced inwardly and sat in pensive silence while Quinn and Ramsay argued back and forth about Jillian. The men were still at it some time later and didn't even notice when Grim left the room. Having spent the early hours of dawn with Quinn and Ramsay, Grim checked in on Jillian, who was still sleeping soundly as he'd left her, curled on her side beneath a mound of blankets. He longed to ease himself into bed beside her, to experience the pleasure of waking up to the sensation of holding her in his arms, but he couldn't risk being seen leaving Jillian's chambers once the castle roused. So, as morning broke over Caithness, he nodded to Ramsay, who'd managed to stumble down the stairs in search of solid food, whistled to Occam, and swung himself onto the stallion's bare back. He headed for the lock, intending to immerse his overheated body in icy water. The completion he'd experienced with Jillian had only whetted his appetite for her, and he was afraid if she so much as smiled at him today, he would fall on her with all the slavering grace of a starved wolf. Years of denied passion were free, and he realized he possessed a hunger for Jillian that could never be sated. He nudged Occam around a copse of trees and paused, savoring the quiet beauty of the morning. The loch rippled, a vast silvery mirror beneath rosy clouds. Lofty oaks waved black branches against the red sky. Strains of a painfully off-key song carried faintly on the breeze, and Grimm circumvented the loch carefully, guiding his horse past sinkholes and rocky terrain, following the sound until, rounding a thick cluster of growth, he saw Zeke hunched near the water. The lad's legs were tucked up, his forearms resting on his knees, and he was rubbing his eyes. Grimm drew Occam to a halt. Zeke was half-crying the broken words of an old lullaby. Grimm wondered who had managed to hurt his feelings this early in the morning. He watched the lad, trying to decide what was the best way to approach him without offending the child's dignity. As he hesitated in the shadows, any decision on his part was rendered obsolete as the crackling of brush and bracken alerted him to an intruder. He scanned the surrounding forest, but before he had detected the source, a snarling animal sprang from the woods a few feet behind Zeke. A great, mangy mountain cat burst onto the bank of the loch, thick white spittle foaming on its snout. It snarled, baring lethal white fangs. Zeke turned, and his song warbled to a stop. His eyes widened in horror. Grimm instantly flung himself from Occam's back, yanked his skein doof from his thigh, and drew it across his hand, causing blood to well in his palm. In less than a heartbeat, the sight of the crimson beads roused the Viking warrior and set the berserker free. Moving with inhuman speed, he snatched Zeke up and tossed him on his stallion and smacked Occam on the rump. Then he did what he so despised. He lost time.
"Somebody help!"
Zeke shrieked as he rode into the bailey on Occam's back.
"You must help, Grimm!"
Hatchard burst from the castle to find Zeke perched on Occam's back, hanging onto his mane with whitened knuckles.
"Where?"
he shouted.
"Look! There's a crazed mountain cat, and it almost ate me! And he threw me on the horse and I rode by myself, but he attacked Grimm, and he's going to be hurt!"
Hatchard sped off for the loch, unaware of two other people who'd been alerted by the shouting and were hot on his heels. Hatchard found Grimm standing motionless, a black shadow against the misty red sky. He was facing the water, standing amidst the scraps of what had once been an animal. His arms and face were covered with blood.
"Gavrel," Hatchard said quietly, using his real name in hopes of reaching the man within the beast.
Grimm did not reply. His chest rose and fell rapidly. His body was pumped up with the massive quantities of oxygen a berserker inhaled to compensate for the preternatural rage. The veins in his corded forearms pulsed dark blue against his skin. And, Hatchard marveled, he seemed twice as large as he normally was. Hatchard had seen Grimm in the thick of berserker rage several times when he'd trained the fosterling. But the mature Grimm wore it far more dangerously than the stripling lad had.
"Gavril, Roderick, Icarus, Mikeliak," Hatchard said.
He approached him from the side, trying to enter Grimm's line of vision in as innocuous a manner as possible. Behind him, two figures stopped in the shadows of the forest. One of them gasped softly and echoed the name.
"Gavril? It's me, Hatchard,"
Hatchard repeated gently. Grimm turned and looked directly at the chief man-at-arms. The warrior's blue eyes were incandescent, glowing like banked coals, and Hatchard received a disconcerting lesson in what it felt like to have someone look straight through him. A strangled noise behind him compelled Hatchard's attention. Turning, he realized Zeke had trailed him.
"Oh my God!"
Zeke breathed. He trundled closer, peering intently at the ground, then paused mere inches from Grimm. His eyes widened enormously as he scanned the small bits of what had once been a rabid mountain cat, savage enough to shred a grown man, and driven by the blood sickness, mad enough to attempt it. His astonished gaze drifted upward to Grimm's brilliant blue eyes, and he nearly rose on his tiptoes, staring.
"He's a berserker,"
Zeke breathed reverently.
"Look! His eyes are glowing. They do exist."
"Fetch Quinn, Zeke. Now,"
Hatchard commanded.
Bring no one else but Quinn, no matter what. Do you understand? And not a word of this to anyone.
Zeke stole one last worshipping look.
Aye,
he said, then fled to get Quinn. Chapter 18.
I truly doubt he ripped the animal to pieces, Zeke. It isn't healthy to exaggerate,
Gillian reprimanded, masking her amusement to protect the boy's sensitive feelings.
I didn't exaggerate,
Zeke said passionately.
I told the truth. I was down by the loch, and a rabid mountain cat attacked me, and Grim threw me on his horse and caught the beastie in mid-leap and killed it with one flick of his wrist. He's a berserker, he is. I knew he was special. Huh.
The little boy snorted.
He doesn't need to be a puny lair. He's king of the warriors. He's a legend.
Hatchard took Zeke firmly by the arm and tugged him away from Gillian.
Go find your mother, lad, and do it now.
He fixed Zeke with a glower that dared him to disobey, then snorted as the boy fled the room. He met Gillian's gaze and shrugged.
You know how the wee lads are. They must have their fairy tales.
Is Grim all right?
Gillian asked breathlessly. Her entire body ached in a most pleasurable way. Every move was a subtle reminder of the things he'd done to her, the things she'd begged him to do before the night had ended.
Right as rain, Hatcher replied dryly. The animal was indeed rabid, but don't worry, it didn't manage to bite him.
Did Grim kill it?
A rabid mountain cat could decimate an entire herd of sheep in less than a fortnight. They wouldn't usually attack a man, but apparently Zeke had been small enough, and the beast had been sick enough, to try it.
Yes, Hatchard replied tersely. He and Quinn are burying it now,
he lied with cool aplomb. There hadn't been enough left to bury, but neither love nor gold could have persuaded Hatchard to tell Gillian that. He winced inwardly. Had the infected mountain cat bitten Zeke even once, the boy would have been contaminated by the ferocious animal's blood sickness and died within days, foaming at the mouth in excruciating agony. Praise the saints Grim had been there, and praise Odin for his special talents, or Caithness would have been singing funeral dirges and weeping.
Zeke rode Occam all by himself,
Gillian marveled aloud. Hatchard glanced up and smiled faintly.
That he did, and it saved his life, my lady.
Gillian's expression was thoughtful as she headed for the door.
If Grim hadn't believed in the lad enough to try to teach him, Zeke might never have been able to escape.
Where are you going?
Hatchard said quickly. Gillian paused at the entrance.
Why, to find Grim, of course.
To tell him she was wrong to have doubted him, to see his face, to glimpse the newfound intimacy in his eyes.
M'lady, leave him be for a time. He and Quinn are talking, and he needs to be alone.
In a flash, Gillian felt 13 again, excluded from the company of the man she loved.
Did he say that? That he needed to be alone?
He's washing up in the loch, Hatchard said. Just give him time, all right?
Gillian sighed. She would wait for him to come to her.
Grim, I didn't want to say anything before, but I paid that innkeeper a small fortune to get rid of the butcher,
Quinn said as he paced the edge of the loch. Grim rose from the icy water, finally clean again, and scowled at the remains of the animal. Quinn caught his look and said,
Don't even start. You saved his life, Grim. I won't hear one word of your self-loathing for being a berserker. It's a gift. Do you hear me? A gift.
Grim exhaled dismally and made no response. Quinn continued where he'd left off.
As I was saying, I paid the man. If he didn't get rid of the butcher, then I'm going to be heading back to Durkesh to get some answers.
Grim waved his hand, dismissing Quinn's concern.
Do not bother, Quinn. It was not the butcher.
What? What do you mean it wasn't the butcher?
It wasn't even the chicken. It was the whiskey.
Quinn blinked rapidly several times.
Then why did you say it was the chicken?
I trust you, Quinn. I do not know, Ramsay. The poison was root of Timson. The root loses its poisonous properties if simmered, broiled, or roasted. It must be crushed and diluted, and its effect is enhanced by alcohol. Besides, I found the remainder of the bottle downstairs the next morning. Whoever it was, wasn't very thorough.
But I didn't drink any whiskey with you,
Quinn protested.
You didn't know you drank whiskey.
Grim gave him a wry, apologetic twist of his lips.
I dumped my final mug of whiskey, poured from the drugged bottle, over the chicken to get rid of it because I was sick of drinking and getting ready to leave. The poison is odorless until digested, and even my senses couldn't pick it up. Once it mixes with the body's fluids, however, it takes on a noxious odor.
Christ, man!
Quinn gave him a dark look.
Of all the luck!
So, who do you think did it?
Grim studied him intently.
I've given that a lot of thought over the past few days. The only thing I can conclude is that the McCain have ferreted me out again somehow.
Don't they know poison doesn't work on a berserker?
They've never succeeded in taking one alive to question.
So they may not know what feats one of you is capable of. Even they don't know how to kill you.
Correct.
Quinn mulled this new information over a moment. Then his eyes clouded.
If that's the case, if the McCain have indeed found you again, Grim, what's to stop them from following you to Caithness?
Quinn asked carefully.
Again.
Grim raised his head with a stricken look. Gillian didn't see Grim the rest of the day. Quinn informed her that he'd gone riding and would likely not return until nightfall. Night came, and the castle retired. Peering out the casement window, she spied Occam wandering the bailey. Grim had returned. Draping a plush woolen over her chemise, Gillian slipped from her chambers. The castle was quiet, its occupants sleeping.
Gillian!
Gillian stopped in mid-step. She turned, suppressing her impatience. She needed to see Grim, to touch him again, to investigate their newfound intimacy, and to revel in her womanhood. Kaylee Twillow was hurrying down the corridor toward her, tugging a wrapper around her shoulders in the chilly air. The older woman's chestnut curls were unpinned and rumpled, and her face was flushed with sleep.
"I heard your door open,"
Kaylee said.
"Did you want something from the kitchen? You should have called for me. I'll be happy to get it for you. What did you want? Shall I prepare you a mug of warm milk, some bread and honey?"
Gillian demurred and patted Kaylee's shoulder reassuringly.
"Don't worry, Kaylee. You go back to bed. I'll get it." "It's no problem. I was just considering a snack myself."
Worried eyes flickered over Gillian's impromptu robe of soft woolen.
"Kaylee,"
Gillian tried again.
"You needn't worry about me. I'll be fine. Really, I'm just a bit restless and..."
"You're going to see Grim."
Gillian flushed.
"I must. I need to speak with him. I can't sleep. There are things I must say." "That can't wait until the morning light."
Kaylee eyed the sheer chemise peeking from beneath the woolen.
"You're not even properly dressed,"
she said reprovingly.
"If you find him clad in that, you get more than you bargained for."
"You don't understand,"
Gillian said, sighing.
"Oh, but my dear lass, I do. I saw the remains of the great hall this morning."
Gillian swallowed and said nothing.
"Shall we cut to the quick of it?"
Kaylee said tersely.
"I'm not so old that I can't recall what it's like. I loved a man like him once. I understand what you're feeling, perhaps even more so than you do, so let me put it into plain words. Quinn is sexual. Ramsay Logan is sexual, and the power they exude promises a rollicking good time."
Kaylee took Gillian's hands in hers and regarded her soberly.
"But Grim Roderick, ah, he's an entirely different animal. He's not merely sexual. He drips sensual power, and Gillian, sensual power can reshape a woman. You do know what I mean. I'm flesh and blood, too, lass."
Kaylee laid a gentle hand against her cheek.
"Gillian, I've watched you mature with pride, love, and lately a touch of fear. I'm proud because you have a good, fearless heart and strong will. I'm fearful because your will can make you headstrong beyond compare. Heed my words before you commit yourself to a course that is irrevocable. Sexual men can be forgotten, but a sensual man lingers in a woman's heart forever." "Oh, Kaylee,
It's too late,
Gillian confessed.
He's in there already.
Kaylee drew her into her arms.
I was afraid of that. Gillian, what if he leaves you? How will you handle that? How will you go on? A man like Quinn would never leave. A man like Grimm, well, the men who are larger than life are also the most dangerous to a woman. Grimm is unpredictable.
Do you regret yours?
My what?
Your man, like Grimm.
Kaylee's features softened rapturously, and her expression was answer enough.
And there you have it,
Gillian pointed out gently.
Kaylee, if I knew that I could only have a few nights in that man's arms or nothing, I would take those magic nights and use them to keep me warm for the rest of my life.
Kaylee swallowed audibly, her eyes filled with empathy. She smiled faintly.
I understand, lass,
she said finally.
Good night, my dear Kaylee. Go back to bed and permit me the same sweet dreams you once dreamt yourself.
I love you, lass,
Kaylee said gruffly.
I love you too, Kaylee,
Gillian replied with a smile as she slipped down the corridor to find Grimm. Gillian entered his chambers quietly. He wasn't there. She sighed, frustrated, and moved restlessly about his room. His chambers were Spartan, as clean and disciplined as the man. Nothing was out of order except for a mussed pillow. Smiling, she stepped to the bed and picked it up to plump it. She pressed it to her face for a moment and inhaled his crisp, masculine scent. Her smile faltered and became quiet wonder when she spied the tattered book the pillow had been concealing. Aesop's Fables. It was the illustrated manuscript she'd given him nearly a dozen years before, that first snowy Christmas they'd spent together. She dropped the pillow and gathered the manuscript, stroking it tenderly with her fingertips. The pages were frayed, the illustrations faded, and little notes and oddities peeked out from the binding. He'd been carrying it all these years, tucking in his mementos, much as she had done with her volume. She cradled it wonderingly. This book told her everything she needed to know. Grimm Roderick was a warrior, a hunter, a guard, an often hard man who carried a tattered copy of Aesop's Fables wherever he went, occasionally secreting dried flowers and verses between the pages. She flipped through, stopping at a note that had been crumpled and re-smoothed dozens of times.
I will be on the roof at gloaming. I must speak to you tonight, Grimm.
He'd never forgotten her. Sensitive yet strong, capable yet vulnerable, earthy and sensual, she was hopelessly in love with him.
I kept it.
Gillian spun around. Once again, she hadn't heard a sound when he'd entered the room. He was framed in the doorway, his eyes dark and unreadable.
I see that,
she replied in a hushed voice. He crossed the room and dropped himself into a chair before the fire, his back to her. Gillian stood, hugging the precious book to her chest in silence. They were so close to the intimacy she'd always wanted from him that she was afraid to break the spell with words.
I can't believe you're not bombarding me with questions, he said carefully. Like, why did I keep it?
Why did you keep it, Grimm?
She asked. But it really didn't matter why. He had carried it with him to this day, and that was enough.
Come here, lass.
Gillian gently placed the book on a table and approached him slowly. She hesitated a few paces from his side. Grimm's hand shot out and fastened on her wrist.
Gillian, please.
His voice was so low it was almost inaudible.
Please what?
She whispered. Swiftly, he flicked his wrist and she was standing before him, captured between his thighs. His eyes were fixed in the vicinity of her navel, as if he couldn't summon the strength to raise them.
Kiss me, Gillian. Touch me. Show me I'm alive, he whispered back.
Gillian bit her lip as his words slammed into her heart. The most valiant, intense man she'd ever known was afraid he wasn't fully alive. He raised his head, and she cried out softly at his expression. It was dark, his eyes swirling with shadows, memories of times she couldn't even begin to comprehend. She cradled his face between her hands and kissed him, lingering on his lower lip, savoring the sensual curve.
"You are the most incredibly alive man I've ever known."
"Am I, Chilean? Am I?"
he asked desperately. How could he wonder about such a thing? His lips were warm and vital, his hands moved across her skin, awakening nerve endings she'd never suspected existed.
"Why did you keep the book, Grim?"
His hands fastened possessively on her waist.
"I kept it to remind me that although there is evil, there is sometimes beauty and light. You, Jillian, you were always my light."
Jillian's heart soared. She'd come seeking confirmation of their fragile intimacy, to prove to herself that the tenderness and physical affection Grimm had offered her the night before had not been an isolated instance. She'd never dreamed that he might offer her words of love. For what else were words like that if not words of love? Her dreams were finally being realized. She'd always known there was a bond between herself and her wild-eyed beast boy. But coming together as man and woman exceeded all her childhood fantasies. Rising to his feet, Grimm pulled her against the muscled length of his body, unself-consciously offering her the powerful evidence of his desire. The mere brush of him between her thighs made her shiver breathlessly.
"I can't get enough of you, Jillian,"
he breathed, fascinated by the sensual widening of her eyes, by the instinctive way her tongue wet the fullness of her lower lip. He captured it and kissed her slowly with scorching, lingering, mind-stealing kisses as he backed her toward the bed. Halfway there, he seemed to change his mind. He cupped her shoulders in his strong hands and turned her in his arms. Jillian had thought the sensation of him pressed against her thighs was too exciting to bear, but now the hard length of him rose hot against her, and she pushed back into him in a wordless plea. His hands began a languid journey over her body. He caressed the soft curve of her hips, slid his palms up the bow of her back, then slipped his arms around her to catch her breasts, finding the sensitive nipples and tugging them gently through the thin fabric of her chemise. Gathering her hair in his hand, he tenderly tugged it to the side and kissed the exposed nape of her neck. The brief nip of his teeth caused her to arch her back and surge against him. He edged her forward, guiding her past the bed and toward the wall. Pressing her close to the smooth stones, he twined his fingers between hers, with his palms flushed to the backs of her hands. He placed her palms against the wall above her head.
"Do not remove your hands from the wall, Jillian. No matter what I do, hold on to the wall and simply feel."
Jillian held on to the wall as if it were her last hold on sanity. When he slipped her chemise from her body, she shivered as the cool air met her heated skin. His hands brushed the firm underside of her breasts, trailed over her waist, and hesitated on her hips. Then his fingers tightened on her skin, and his tongue traced a lingering path down the hollow of her spine. She leaned against the wall, her palms flat, swaying with pleasure. By the time he was done, there was not one inch of her skin he hadn't kissed or caressed with the velvety stroke of his tongue. Now she understood why he'd told her to hold on to the wall. It had nothing to do with the wall itself, and everything to do with preventing her from touching him. Being touched by Grimm Roderick, yet being unable to touch back, overwhelmed her senses and forced her to accept pure pleasure with no distractions. He dropped to his knees behind her, and he told her, both with his hands and with a low rush of words, how beautiful she was, what she did to him, and how very much he wanted her, needed her. He slid his hands up the insides of her thighs, trailing slow, heated kisses across the round curves of her bottom. A sudden gasp of pleasure escaped her when his hand found the sensitive center between her legs. As his fingers stroked her with an irresistible friction that coaxed a whimper from her throat, he nipped her buttock.
"Grim!" she gasped.
Laughter, laced with something dangerously erotic, heightened her arousal even further.
"Hands on the wall?"
he reminded when she started to turn. He eased her thighs apart and maneuvered himself so that he was on the floor, gazing up at her, his face only inches from the part of her that was aching for his touch. She opened her mouth to protest his being so intimately positioned, when the heat of his tongue silenced any admonishment she may have made. Her neck arched, and it took every ounce of her will not to scream from the stunning pleasure he ignited within her. Then her gaze was drawn down to the magnificent warrior kneeling between her thighs, the vision of his face, intense with passion, coupled with the incredible feelings he was coaxing forth, shortened her breath to tiny, helpless pants. She rocked softly against him, making small, breathless cries unlike any sound she'd ever thought to make before.
"I'm going to fall," she gasped.
"I'll catch you, Jillian."
"But I don't think we should. Oh."
"Don't think," he agreed.
"But my legs won't hold."
He laughed, and with a swift tug yanked her down on top of him. They tumbled onto a woven rug in a press of heated skin and tangled limbs.
"And to think you were afraid to fall," he teased.
She savored the incredible closeness of their bodies, and at that moment she fully let go. As she fell against him, she fell even more completely in love with him, into a mindless passion. He would always catch her. That she knew without a doubt. They rolled across the rug in a playful skirmish for the superior position. Then he flipped her so suddenly that she landed on her hands and knees. In an instant, he was behind her, nudging into the cleft between the soft curves of her bottom, and she gasped aloud.
"Now!"
she cried.
"Now!" he agreed, and drove into her.
She felt him deep inside her, filling her, joining them together. Cupping her breasts, he thrust inside her, and she felt so connected to him that it took her breath away. She made a sound of supreme dismay when he slipped out, leaving an ache deep inside her, and she purred with pleasure when he filled her again so deeply that she arched her back and rose up against him, her shoulders pressing against his hard chest. He must have awakened something inside her, Jillian decided, because it took only a few more thrusts for her body to break free and shatter into a thousand quivering pieces. She would never get enough of him. Hours later, a sated Jillian was lying in a puddle of contentment on his bed. When his hands began their sensual dance upon her body, she sighed.
"I couldn't possibly feel that again, Grim," she protested weakly. "I haven't a muscle left in my body, and I simply couldn't—"
Grim smiled wickedly.
"When I was younger, I stayed with gypsies for a time."
Jillian lay back against the pillow, wondering what this had to do with the earth-shattering explosions he'd been lavishing upon her.
"They had a strange ceremony they practiced to induce vision. It didn't rely upon a mixture of herbs and spices or the smoking of a pipe. It relied upon sexual excess to achieve a state that transcended the everyday frame of mind. They would place one of their seers in a tent with a dozen women, who repeatedly brought him to climax until he was begging for no more pleasure. The Rome claimed climax releases something in the body that causes the spirit to soar, ripping it free from its earthly mooring, opening it to the extraordinary."
"I believe that."
Jillian was fascinated.
"It makes me feel as if I've drunk too much sweet wine. My head gets swimmy, and my body feels weak and strong at the same time."
When his fingers found the juncture of her thighs, she shivered. With a few deft movements, he had her tingling, hungering all over again, and when he brought her to a swift release with his hands, it was even more exquisite than the last.
"Grim!"
Heat erupted inside her and she shuddered. He didn't remove his hand, but cupped her gently until she calmed. Then he began again, moving his fingers in a light, teasing motion over the sensitive nub.
"And again, my sweet Jillian, until you can no longer look at me without knowing what I can do to you, where I can take you, how many times I can take you there."
For Grimm, there was no rest that night. He paced the stone floor, kicking at the lambskin rugs, wondering how he was going to bring himself to do the right thing this time. Never in his life had he allowed himself to get too attached to anything or anyone, because he'd always known that at any moment he might have to leave, fleeing the hunt the McCain perpetuated against any man suspected of being berserk. They'd found him in Dirkesh. Quinn was right. What was to prevent them from coming to Caithness? They could have easily followed the lumbering cart upon which they'd transported the sick men. And if they descended upon Caithness again, what harm would this blessed place suffer? What harm might they do to Jillian's home and Jillian herself? Edmund had died as a result of the last McCain attack. Maybe he'd caught a lung fever, but if he hadn't been wounded to begin with, he would never have caught the disease that had claimed his young life. Grimm couldn't live with the thought of bringing harm, again, to Caithness and Jillian. He stopped by the bed, gazed down at her, and watched her with his heart in his eyes.
"I love you, Jillian,"
he willed to her sleeping form.
"Always have, and always will. But I'm berserk, and you, you're the best of life. I have an insane old da in a crumbling pile of rocks to call home. It's no life for a lady."
He forced his dark thoughts away, scattering them with his formidable will. Sinking into her body was all he wanted to contemplate. These past 2 days with Jillian had been the best 2 days of his life. He should be content with that, he told himself. She rolled over in her sleep, her hand falling palm open, fingers slightly curled. Her golden hair fanned out across the white pillows, her full breasts spilled above the downy linen. "Just one more day," he promised himself, "and one more blissful, magical, incredible night. Then he'd leave before it was too late." Chapter 19. Quinn and Ramsay sacked the kitchens of Caithness at dawn. Not one piece of fruit, not one slab of meat, not a single savory morsel was spared.
"Christ, I feel like I haven't eaten solid food in weeks."
"We damn near haven't. Broth and bread don't count as real food."
Ramsay tore off a chunk of smoked ham with his teeth.
"I haven't had an appetite until now. That damn poison made me so sick I thought I might never want to eat again."
Quinn palmed an apple and bit into it with relish. Platters were piled haphazardly atop every available surface. The maids would faint when they discovered the men had wiped out all the food that had been prepared for the coming weekend.
"We'll hunt and replenish."
Quinn felt mildly guilty as his gaze swept the decimated larder.
"You up to a bit of hunting, Ram, my man?"
"So long as it's wearing a skirt," Ramsay said with a gusty sigh, "and answers to the name of Jillian."
"I don't think so,"
Quinn replied acerbically.
"Perhaps you didn't notice, but Jillian obviously has a bit of a tendre for me. If I hadn't gotten sick at Dirkesh, I would have proposed marriage, and we would be betrothed by now."
Ramsay took a deep slug of whiskey and placed the bottle on the counter with a thump.
"You really are dense, aren't you, de Moncrief?"
"Well, don't tell me you think it's you."
Quinn rolled his eyes.
"Of course not. It's a bastard Roderick. It always has been ever since we got here."
Ramsay's dark expression was murderous.
"And after what happened 2 nights ago.
Quinn stiffened.
"What happened 2 nights ago?
Ramsay took another swallow, swished it over his tongue, and brooded a silent moment.
"Did you notice the long table in the hall is gone, Quinn?"
"Now that you mention it, yes, it is. What happened to it?"
"I saw pieces of it out back behind the bothy. It was shattered down the center."
Quinn said nothing. He knew of only one man who could shatter a table of such massive proportions with his bare hands.
"I came down yesterday to find the maid sweeping food off the floor. One of the candelabra was wedged into the wall. Someone had a hell of a fight in there 2 nights ago, but nobody has breathed a word about it, have they?"
"What are you saying, Logan?"
Quinn asked grimly.
"Just that the only 2 people who were well enough to dine in the hall 2 nights ago were Grimm and Jillian. They obviously fought, but today Grimm didn't seem bitter,
And Jillian?
Why, the woman has been wreathed in smiles and good humor. Matter of fact, just as a little test. What say we go wake Grim right now and talk to him about it? That is, if he's not otherwise occupied.
If you're insinuating that Jillian might be in his chambers, you're a stupid bastard, and I'll call you out for it, Quinn snapped. And maybe there was a fight in the hall between them, but I guarantee you that Grim is far too honorable to seduce Jillian. Besides, he can't even bring himself to say a civil word to her. He certainly couldn't be nice to her long enough to seduce her.
You don't find it curious that just when it seemed like you were making progress with her, you and I get poisoned and put out of the running, but he doesn't?
Ramsay asked.
I'd say it was suspiciously convenient. I think it's damned odd that he didn't get sick, too.
He didn't consume any of the poison, Quinn defended.
Maybe that's because he knew what was poisoned in advance, Ramsay argued.
That's enough, Logan, Quinn snapped. It's one thing to accuse him of wanting Jillian. Hell, we all want her. But it's entirely another to accuse him of trying to kill us. You don't know a damn thing about Grim Roderick.
Maybe you're the one who doesn't know him, Ramsay countered. Maybe Grim Roderick pretends to be something he's not. I, for one, plan to wake him right now and find out.
Ramsay stalked from the room, muttering under his breath. Quinn shook his head and vaulted after him.
Logan, would you cool your heels?
No! You're so convinced of his innocence, I say let's make him prove it!
Ramsay took the stairs to the west wing three at a time, and Quinn had to lope to keep up. As Logan sped down the long corridor, Quinn overtook him and placed a restraining hand on his shoulder, but Ramsay shook it off.
If you're so convinced he wouldn't do it, what are you afraid of, de Moncrief? Let's just go rouse him.
You're not thinking clearly about this, Ram...
Quinn broke off abruptly as the door to Grimm's chambers eased open. When Jillian slipped out into the hallway, his eyes widened incredulously. There was unequivocally no reason for Jillian to be leaving Grimm's chambers in the wee hours of the morning, but for the reason Ramsay had suggested. She was his lover. Quinn instantly ducked back, pulling Ramsay with him into the shadowed alcove of a doorway. Her hair was disheveled, and she wore only a woolen draped about her shoulders. Although it trailed nearly to the floor, it left little doubt that there was nothing beneath it.
"Odin's balls," he whispered.
Ramsay favored him with a mocking smile as they lurked in the dark alcove.
"Not the Honorable Grim Roderick, right, Quinn?" he whispered.
"That son of a bitch!"
Quinn's gaze lingered on Jillian's sweet curves as she disappeared down the hallway. The early rays of dawn coming in the tall windows colored his eyes with a strangely crimson glint as he stared at Ramsay.
"Some best friend, eh, de Moncrief? He knew you wanted her. He doesn't even offer her marriage. He just takes it for free."
"Over my dead body he will," Quinn vowed.
"Her da brought three men here so she could choose a husband. And what does he do? Both you and I would do the honorable thing, marry her and give her a name, babes, and a life. Roderick tops her and will likely saunter off into the sunset, and you know it. That man has no intention of wedding her. If he possessed one honorable intention, he would have left her to you or me, men who would do right by her. I'm telling you, you don't know him as well as you think."
Quinn scowled. And the minute Jillian disappeared from view, he stalked off, muttering beneath his breath. The day passed in a haze of happiness for Jillian. The only moment it was marred was when she encountered Quinn at breakfast. He was distant and aloof, not his normal self at all. He eyed her strangely, fidgeted over his breakfast, and finally stalked off in silence. Once or twice she brushed past Ramsay, who was also behaving oddly. Jillian didn't spare much thought for it. They were probably still suffering the after-effects of the poison, and would be fine in time. The world was a magnificent place, in her opinion. She was even feeling magnanimous toward her da for having brought her true love back to her. In a burst of generosity, she decided he was as wise as she'd once thought. She would wed Grim Roderick, and her life would be perfect. Chapter 20.
"Well?"
Ronan McKilliock demanded. Elliot shuffled forward, clutching a sheaf of crisp parchment in his hand.
"Toby did well, my lord, although we couldn't risk moving in too close to Caithness. Your son possesses the same remarkable senses you have. Still, Toby managed to capture his likeness on several occasions, riding, saving a small boy, and twice with the woman.
Let me see."
Ronan thrust an impatient hand at Elliot. He rifled through the pages one by one, absorbing every detail.
"Oh, he's a bonny lad, isn't he, Elliot? Look at those shoulders. Toby didn't exaggerate, did he?"
When Elliot shook his head, Ronan smiled.
"Look at that power. My son's every inch a legendary warrior. The lasses must swoon over him."
"Aye, he is a legend, your son is. You should have seen him kill the mountain cat. He caught his own hand to bring on the berserker rage, to save the child."
Ronan passed the sketches to the man at his side. Two pairs of ice-blue eyes studied every line.
"By Odin's spear!"
Ronan exhaled slowly as he reached the last two drawings.
"She's the loveliest thing I've ever seen."
"Your son thinks so,"
Elliot said smugly.
"He's every bit as besotted as you were with Jolin. She's the one, my lord, no doubt about it."
"Have they..."
Ronan trailed off meaningfully.
"Judging by the wreck Gavro made of the Great Hall, I'd say yes."
Elliot grinned. Ronan and the man at his side exchanged pleased glances.
"The time is at hand. Get with Giles and start the preparations for him to be coming home."
"Yes, my lord."
The man sitting next to Ronan raised ice-blue eyes to the MacIlliacs.
"Do you really think it's going to happen as the old woman foretold?"
Ronan's brother, Balder, asked softly.
"Cataclysmic changes,"
Ronan murmured.
"She said this generation would suffer more greatly than any MacIlliac, but promised that so too would this generation advance, and no greater happiness. The old seer swore that my son would see sons of his own, and I believe that. She vowed that when he chose his mate would be bringing him home to Maldaban."
"And how will you transcend his hatred for you, Ronan?"
his brother asked.
"I don't know,"
Ronan sighed heavily.
"Maybe. I'm hoping for a miracle, that he'll listen and forgive me. Now that he's found his mate, he may be sympathetic to my plight. He may be capable of understanding why I did what I did, and why I let him go."
"Dunna be so hard on yourself, Ronan. The MacCain would have followed you to him if you'd gone after him. They were waiting for you to betray his hiding place. They know you won't breed more sons. They dunna know I even exist. It's Gavril they're determined to destroy, and the time is quickening. If they discover he's found his mate, they'll stop at nothing."
"I know. He was well hidden at Caithness for years, so I thought it best to leave well enough alone. Gibraltar trained him better than I could have at the time."
Ronan met Balder's gaze.
"But I always thought that at some point he would come home of his own volition, out of curiosity or confusion about what he was, if nothing else, and long before now, when he didn't, when he never once looked west to Maldaban. Ah, Balder, I fear I grew bitter. I couldn't believe he hated me so completely."
"What makes you think he'll be forgiving you now?"
Ronan raised his hands in a gesture of helplessness.
"A fool's fancy, I must believe, or else I'd have no reason to go on."
Balder clasped his shoulder affectionately.
"You have a reason to go on. The MacCain must be defeated once and for all, and you must ensure the safety of your son's sons. That in itself is reason enough."
"And it will be done,"
Ronan vowed. Grim spent the day riding, scouring every inch of Caithness for some sign that the MacCain had found him. He knew how they operated. They would set up camp on the perimeter of the estate and wait for the right moment, any moment of vulnerability. Grim rode the entire circumference, searching for anything, the remains of a recent fire, missing livestock commandeered and slaughtered, word of strangers among the crofters. He found nothing, not one shred of evidence to support his suspicion that he was being watched. Still, a prickling of unease lurked at the base of his neck, where he always felt it when something was wrong. There was a threat, unidentified and unseen, somewhere at Caithness. He rode into the bailey at dusk, battling an overwhelming desire to slip from his horse, race into the castle, and rush to Jillian, to sweep her into his embrace, carry her to his chambers, and make love to her until neither of them could move, which for a berserker was a very long time.
"Leave," his conscience pricked. "Leave this moment. Don't even pack a satchel. Don't even say goodbye. Just get out now."
He felt like he was being torn in half. In all the years he'd dreamed of Jillian, he'd never imagined he could feel this way. She completed him. The berserker had risen in him and been humbled by her presence. She could make him clean again. Merely being with her soothed the beast he'd learned to hate, the beast she didn't even know existed. He grimaced inwardly as hope, the treacherous emotion he'd never permitted himself to feel, jockeyed for position with his premonition of danger. Hope was a luxury he could ill afford. Hope made men do foolish things, such as staying at Caithness when all his heightened senses were clamoring that despite finding no sign of McCain, he was being watched and a confrontation was imminent. He knew how to handle danger. He didn't know how to handle hope. Sighing, he entered the great hall and picked out a platter of fruit near the hearth. Selecting a ripe pear, he dropped into a chair before the fire and brooded into the flames, battling his urge to seek her out. He had to make some decisions. He had to find a way to behave honorably, to do the right thing. But he no longer knew what the right thing was. Nothing was black and white anymore. There were no easy answers. He knew it was dangerous to remain at Caithness, but he wanted to remain more than anything he'd ever desired in his life. He was so lost in thought, he didn't hear Ramsay approach until the Highlander's deep, rumbling voice jarred him. That alone should have warned him that he'd allowed his guard to slip dangerously.
"Where have you been, Roderick?"
"Riding."
"All day? Damn it, man, there's a beautiful